morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Welcome to Democratic Perspective again. Sitting across from me
is Mike Cosentino, right here, Democratic Perspective this morning, Monday. We got a good guest here.
What are we going to be talking about?
We're going to be talking about Social Security, for God's sakes. Something that, you know, is keeping many people alive and keeps people from eating cat food and dog food,
Or eating cats and dogs.
But Social Security is one of those really, really cool things about living in America. So we're going to do a little love note to Social Security and a little factual discussion here. We're going to have that factual discussion with
Max Richmond, and he's the president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. I'm not going to give the initials for that organization.
Thanks.
Max,
appreciate
are you there?
I'm here.
Hey.
Good. We're glad to have you with us because we were talking about before the show in 2011, I think our second show on the air, we were 15 minutes back then, we discussed Social Security. And I just handed Mike a write-up of what we did on that show. So the battle to get out clean, clear information about Social Security is sort of endless. I know that your organization has been at it for decades.
Well, we have, and it's so important to be able to have that opportunity to counter all of the misinformation, the myths that are out there about Social Security, about how it's funded, what its future portends, and how important it is to so many retirees. So it's great to have a chance to dispel some of those myths and put the facts before the public.
Well, I know we want to talk about the Medicare thing. That's a new wrinkle that's been coming out the last 12 hours on all the news cycles, that this new tax bill. Well, let's go ahead and talk about that right up front. And then we want to talk about the number one myth, and that's about privatization, in my opinion. But let's talk about this thing that's just come out in the last 12 hours. I even got an email from an accountant friend of mine said, did you know this? And I said, yeah, we're going to be talking about it on the show tomorrow. That's talking about what happened. What's in this tax bill that's screwing up the works here?
It's going to affect.
Well, as it impacts the Medicare program, there are a couple of things. The immediate impact will be an automatic $25 billion cut to the Medicare program. This is by virtue of the current law, which requires these kinds of cuts. Nothing has to be taken, no action has to be taken affirmatively. A cut is automatic when the deficit number reaches a certain threshold, which happens in the tax bill that was just reported out by the Senate Finance Committee. So we're going to see an immediate impact. And the thing that's so disconcerting about that is there'll be no one will have their fingerprints on this. It'll be an automatic result of the tax legislation if it becomes law.
That's
bad enough, an automatic $25 billion cut to the Medicare program. Keep in mind that 10,000 people are added to the Medicare rolls every day. That's a phenomenal number. 10,000 are added every day. This is not a time to be cutting the Medicare program, either through this automatic process or in any other format. And I think we should also talk about the House budget resolution and the Senate budget resolution. These resolutions set the framework for what the tax bill is going to accomplish.
Well, that's
with respect to Medicare, we're going to have a $500 billion cut over 10 years. With respect to Medicaid, over $1 trillion. This is devastating in the long run. Besides the immediate $25 billion, these reductions to these programs are going to have a devastating impact on seniors and near seniors.
Yes, sir. To connect the dots, the tax cut bill that the House passed, that the Senate's considering at this very moment, is definitely, most assuredly, going to raise the deficit. It's going to do that. We know that. Everybody knows that. The Republicans know that. The Democrats know that. The president knows that. It's going to do that. And if it does, it's going to trigger this automatic Medicare $25 billion reduction that you're talking about. It's nothing that has to be argued. Nothing's going to come before the House, before the Senate. It's just going to automatically happen because the deficit is skyrocketing because of this tax cut bill that the House passed and that the Senate is considering at this very moment. Is that correct, sir?
That's absolutely. You got it. You nailed it. This is going to happen, as I said a few minutes ago, and I can just envision members of Congress saying, "We didn't do it. We didn't do that because it was automatic." But they're setting up the predicate for this reduction that is going to happen immediately, and as I mentioned, there will be. And you reaffirmed there will be a large increase in the federal deficit, about $1.5 trillion. So, you know, we have seen for years some of the very same members of Congress who are supporting this tax bill, which adds an enormous amount to our federal debt and our annual deficit. They have for years claimed we have to address the deficit, we have to control expenses, and now all of a sudden they're okay with this. But
that is,
from history that when the other shoe is going to drop, and that shoe that drops in the next few years is going to deal with reductions to Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, because that's in fact where the money is.
So if they create a $1.5 trillion deficit beyond what would be normally created, and this is from guys who spent the last 10 years being deficit hawks or suddenly advocating the deficit. What you're saying is down the line they're going to go, oh, the deficit is just too big, it's growing, we've got to cut Social Security and Medicare.
Absolutely. This we've seen this movie before. When President Bush was elected in 2000, and he went down the same path. In a different context, he inherited a budget that was going to be eliminating the deficit. We're looking at surpluses at the end of the Clinton administration. And I remember hearing people like Alan Greenspan speculate about, you know, what are we going to do if we have these surpluses? It might be a problem. He inherited that kind of a budget scenario, and then he proceeded to push through an enormous tax cut. And what did we hear after that? We got to privatize Social Security. We've got to cut Medicare because the budget deficit is growing exponentially. So, you know, you can read the tea leaves simply by looking at what's happened historically. And I have no doubt if this bill, tax bill, passes and creates a situation of ballooning deficits, we're going to be in a year or two talking about how can we trim the deficit, and we're going to be looking at efforts to cut these important social programs.
We're talking to Max Richmond, President and CEO of the Committee to Preserve Medicare and Social Security, this morning. And we can talk about the tax bill and its impact on Medicare.
Because you think this is the biggest danger right now, because we've gone through privatization campaigns, which would have been a huge boon to the investment industry and would have destroyed people's savings if they would have been before 2008. So you think this tax bill is now the biggest danger, political danger, to Social Security and Medicare?
I think it's a significant warning that these programs are in jeopardy. And if you look at the House budget resolution, at least they were more honest in the House than in the Senate. They specifically said, here's how we're going to deal with Medicare and Medicaid. In the Senate, they just put out a number. But in the House budget resolution, they were more specific. And their, this is an approach to Medicare, cutting it by almost $500 billion, that Speaker Ryan has been determined to push through, not only as Speaker, but as chairman of the House Budget Committee before that, and chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. His idea of the perfect Medicare world is, again, similar to what was tried with and failed, thankfully, with Social Security, is privatization. He calls it vouchers. And what that means, and this is in the House plan, instead of when you reach Medicare eligibility age, which, by the way, in the House bill is going to go from 65 to 67, and I have a few thoughts on that. But when you reach that eligibility age, instead of being eligible for traditional Medicare, you will be encouraged to get a voucher. And eventually, that'll be the only avenue for getting health care. You'll get a voucher. And you'll be told, you get this voucher and go out and buy health insurance. Well, why do we have a Medicare program in the first place? It's because private insurance companies did not want to sell insurance, health insurance, to older people at an affordable price because they couldn't make money on it. So we have the Medicare program, and now we're going to look at going back in time to pre-1965, and the message is you have a voucher, which, by the way, the value of it will not keep up annually with the increased cost of health care, with health care inflation. But take this voucher and go buy insurance and good luck.
Well,
and I'm not even sure about the good luck part. But it's not a realistic approach. And raising the age for Medicare is going to mean people will enter Medicare sicker. Because right now, I'm sure you have known of or know people that are getting close to 65, maybe they're 62, 63. They're postponing needed medical treatment because they want to wait till they reach Medicare eligibility age, which is 65.
That's right.
You raise it to 67, they're going to have to wait longer. They're going to enter Medicare sicker. There's going to be less money in the Medicare program to provide that health care. There are going to be 10,000, as I mentioned, 10,000 people a day now becoming eligible for Medicare. It's a recipe for disaster.
So why do they want to do it, Max? I mean, why? The old argument was, well, we've got to cut Medicare and Social Security in order to fight the deficit. Now they've got a tax bill that increases the deficit, and they still want to do exactly the same thing.
Well, you know, I hate to attribute motives to members of Congress and policymakers. So I don't know why they want to do it, but I do know that it is misguided. You know, maybe they feel that they've been parroting these positions for so long that they've created a demand from their constituents to do this.
I don't think so. We have no trouble attributing motives here to politicians. So they want to pursue a path that damages health care or ends health care or delays health care for millions and millions of Americans, knowingly causing suffering and death. This is you know, these guys aren't stupid. Paul Ryan isn't. I'm guessing isn't stupid. He knows that delaying changing the age from 65 to 67 for Medicare, cutting the benefits to Medicare, causes suffering and death. And why? And so what Steve is asking is, why do politicians want to cause suffering and death among Americans?
I think there are some that don't fully understand or appreciate these programs. I think there are some that are more interested in political gain than in people. They're putting politics above people. And I think that will catch up at some point.
So that's behind the
more people understand these programs, how important they are, how they can be improved rather than destroyed. Those positions, I think, will that members of Congress that we're talking about have taken will backfire.
How can it be improved?
What's that?
How can it be improved?
How can it be improved? Well, you know, Well, here's one specific, and I have a few others. Back in 2003, legislation was passed, signed into law, that created a Part D Medicare program. That is the prescription drug component of Medicare. And that was good. But the flaw in that law was the federal government was specifically prohibited from negotiating for the best price for prescription drugs, specifically prohibited in this law setting up, for the first time, a prescription drug coverage piece of Medicare. So, you know, if this were changed, and we opposed that provision at the time, we've been trying to get support to eliminate that prohibition against negotiating for the best price. That would save about $120 billion over 10 years. You can be sure that whoever was in the room when that deal was made, it wasn't the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare.
Right.
It was the pharmaceutical industry to protect their interests. So that's something that could be changed that would bring in more revenue for the program. And what could we do with it? My gosh, Medicare is a terrific program. I mean, anyone who's on Medicare, they may complain about this or that, but they wouldn't give it up. But Medicare does not cover vision, hearing, dental. That's pretty important to everybody, but especially an older person, not just for convenience, but for safety. If you can't hear your doctor clearly, if you can't hear alarms, if your dental situation leads to nutrition problems. So we think that we should at least start having a conversation, and there are members of Congress, Congresswoman Debbie Dingell in particular of Michigan, who are beginning to introduce and develop legislation that would begin to cover hearing, dental, and vision. And I think those are some of the ways the program could be improved.
It strikes me that the right wing, the anti-Social Security, anti-Medicare people, win in a way just by making the program controversial so that you don't have a class in high school that actually explains what Social Security is, that it's social insurance, how it works. You don't have a class in college. You don't. If you go to the Social Security Administration and look at their website, or you go to your website, which I think is even clearer, it explains how everything works, when it was founded, Social Security, I think with 1935, why it was done. But people don't know. And so, I mean, I will get into arguments with people who really don't understand the program. By making the programs controversial, something that has to be debated, the right keeps normal information, government information about what things are, from reaching people.
Right, that's part of the government-hating thing, that government is bad. Anything government does is bad, and therefore it has to be privatized. When anybody that looks at this thing knows that privatization is going to cause all sorts of problems and a lot of people to lose the security of their Social Security benefits.
Why don't you tell folks the address for your website? Because this website, folks, I've been looking at it for the last few days particularly, is filled with good, clear, well-written information about Social Security and Medicare. So you want to give that to folks so they can go to it as a reference?
Yes, well, I appreciate those observations. We're very proud of our website, and I know that many members of Congress rely on it, as well as private citizens. The website is www.ncpssm.org. And we also, by the way, have a toll-free number. If someone's not familiar with the Internet, they can call 1-800-966-1935, 1-800-966-1935. That's easy to remember. It's the year Social Security was signed into law, and we can provide information through that means.
And you can do a search, folks. Just go on and Google the National Committee on Social Security and Medicare, and you go right to their website that way if you don't remember the URL. And And I said earlier, I'm not just flattering Max on this website. It's quite a good website, and particularly folks beginning to go on Medicare or Social Security, it's a good place to go to supplement them the information you can get from the government website.
And I do think it's important that as Steve said, that there's you get educated on this. A lot of people think they know Social Security. A lot of people think they know Medicare, and chances are you don't. At least you don't know the ins and outs and what can be damaged here, what it means to you, and how it can be best applied to your life. This website does a really good job of relating it to the life that you're living at this moment, and dispels a lot of the myths. That first show we did on Democratic Perspective all these years ago was the name of the show was Debunking the Myths about Social Security. But today we have Max Richmond on the line here, the president and CEO of the Committee to Preserve Medicare and Social Security, and who's educating us on what's going on in Washington right now. There's been this constant drumbeat from Speaker Paul Ryan and others against Social Security to privatize it. There's been this constant drumbeat in the Senate and the Congress, the House, to somehow cut Medicare, a program that should be expanded. As Max just said, it doesn't include hearing. It doesn't include dental, which is a part of health. And I face every day driving into this radio station, ladies and gentlemen, all those Medicare patients that don't have vision insurance. Believe me, they're out there. So these other medical conditions, vision, hearing, and dental, are integral over Europe, all over Canada, all over Asia. They recognize these as being a part of health.
We live in a state that thousands and thousands of people go to Mexico for dental work because it's too expensive. They can't afford it here. It's not covered by Medicare. So the biggest threat you see to Social Security and Medicare is this huge tax cut for the wealthy that the Republicans are now trying to resell us a new version of?
Well, you know, that's the immediate issue that we're facing. The broader one really is the pattern of what you mentioned a few minutes ago, the myths about the program that are particularly discouraging to us as advocates of the program. You mentioned they don't teach anything about Social Security in high school. You know, years ago, Social Security had a program where they would send district managers from the local Social Security office to high schools to talk about the program, to explain the value of the program to younger people. They stopped doing that mainly because they couldn't afford it. Their administrative budget has been cut and not kept pace with inflation. So that's a shame, because I think that helped separate some of the myth, debunk the myths that you called it in your opening program, and separate the myth from the fact. And one of the things that you called the perpetual attack on Social Security is reinforcing these myths. And I've heard them for years. There's no money there. There's just a bunch of IOUs. It won't be there when I retire. None of that is accurate. First of all, one of the things that I try to encourage younger people, and I hope those that are listening will pay particular attention to this, Social Security is insurance for families. FICA, we know what the term FICA, how many people know what it stands for? It's Federal Insurance Contribution Act. It funds old age survivor and disability programs. So a third of Social Security benefits go to non-retired workers. I'm talking about disabled, survivor, spouses, children who receive Social Security benefits. For example, if you are a 27-year-old worker right now with a spouse and two children, you have about $500,000 in value combined life and disability insurance because of Social Security. Now, often a young family doesn't even realize it's there until something bad happens in the family. In your state of Arizona, over $18 billion comes into the state in terms of payments to Social Security beneficiaries, $18.2 billion. And that translates into about almost $35 million total economic impact. Because keep in mind, when people get their Social Security checks, and so many of them are living either entirely on Social Security or are largely on Social Security, they're not investing that money. They're not saving it. They're spending it. It goes right into the economy. So it has a huge impact on the economy.
Absolutely. Don't forget to put this in perspective. We're talking about a state that the whole state is run on $9.6 billion. So when we have Social Security people in the state of Arizona making $18 billion, it's a massive impact. And don't forget, we have I spent a lot of time in Tucson lately because they have a good hospital that the people can go to, the people's hospitals in Tucson, by the U of A Medical Center. But the point is, retired military and retired in general, I mean, Tucson is booming on retired defense contractors and retired military. Phoenix, Luke Air Force Base and whatnot, retired military, retired defense contractors. We're talking about people living on Social Security. And plus, in these cases, but as Max Richmond just said, there's a lot of people in the Sedona area, in the Rimrock and Cottonwood, Flagstaff, where this our signal goes, that our Social Security is the only income coming into those households. Lots
Max,
of that.
Do you remember the statistic? I don't remember what it is. Maybe Mike knows it. Is it 1 in 5 or 1 in 4 people on Social Security? Is it their sole or largest source of income? Because people don't really have pensions now, hardly out here.
Right.
Coming
well,
out.
We've seen defined pensions disappear practically throughout our country, and the reliance is more on Social Security than ever before. I think in your county, where Sedona is located, I think about a third of the people receive Social Security benefits. Think about that. And these are retirees, survivors of a worker who became disabled or died young, children. This is a startling statistic, and of course it's higher in a state like yours that has a large number of retirees, but it's a pattern throughout the country of dependency on these benefits. And the other thing that needs to be kept in mind is Social Security, you know, we often hear it referred to as an entitlement. And to me, when that's the way to characterize it, it leads some to think of it as something that you get because you're living and breathing. That's not the case. People pay every paycheck. You pay your payroll tax. You pay into the program. You're buying insurance for your family. And I wish that more and more people would talk about it as an earned benefit rather than an entitlement.
I tried to talk to the people that I work with, because some of them are so anti-government. One fellow didn't even want to take his Social Security. And I said just what you said. You paid in 6.2% of your income, I think it is, for your life, the Social Security income, and your employer kicked in the other 6.2%. It's something that you've earned by working decade after decade. It's not charity. It's part of the social contract. If you work, do your job, that we won't completely let you down. I mean, I think people don't understand that if these programs didn't exist, how much weight would fall on relatives who are already stressed.
Well, and that's the biggest myth, and this is the most important. You talk about social programs in the United States. I don't care whether it's VA or anything. This is the thing that the economy of Sedona, the economy of Cottonwood, those people at Safeway, those people standing in line next to John McCain at Starbucks and Safeway and Cottonwood, by the way, with his entourage. Those people are spending their Social Security checks. Not John, of course, but everybody else is spending their Social Security checks. If that gets decreases, which this new tax bill is guaranteed to do, by the way, is impact decrease that program and perhaps decrease benefits. That's a but this is the most direct injection into the Arizona economy, into local economies, with so many people spending, as you said, they don't invest it. It goes right into the refrigerator. It goes into rent, or it goes into a car payment, or it goes into medical bills. And all of this, all the things that in this area and most areas of the United States that constitute a local economy.
Maybe we should thank our sponsors, Democrats of the Red Rocks. Had a great meeting last week. They have another one. They're talking to a lot of candidates because we're already, even though we're a year before election, Democrats of the Red Rocks is inviting all the state candidates up, and there's some really excellent, excellent people running, some really exciting candidates, folks. What else?
We want to remind people that there are more statewide candidates for Democratic office than ever before. So one of the things that happens that we hear on Democratic Perspective, and both as hosts of the show and about town, is that, well, there's no Democrats ever. Well, the Democratic Party has heard, the ADP, has heard that message, and they have recruited lots and lots of great candidates. So there's going to be some D's to vote for in 2018, and make sure you find them. We do want to thank El Portal. Steve Segner and his whole crew over there, EC and everyone, that gives us a sustenance after the show. You can, so we're at El Portal. They have a great breakfast over there. And you can go over there and beat Steve Williamson up if you like. He's over there every Monday morning right after the show, as I am.
I wanted to go back to one thing you said earlier, Max, because it's what I hear from younger people. They've been convinced that they like the idea of Social Security and Medicare. They just don't think it's going to be for them. I've heard that so many times. I'm never going to be able to collect that, and that's fine for you guys, you older folks, but I'll never have it. How do you reach young people with the stability of this program?
Well, the first thing I tell them is it's there for you right now, and I talked about this a few minutes ago. You have insurance. In the event that for you and your family, in the event that you become ill, disabled, or die young, it's there as survivor benefits, spousal benefits. So it's there right now. That's the first thing to try to emphasize. Now, as to the future of the program, the trustees of Social Security issue a report every spring. They have told us this past spring that the date at which the program will not bring enough revenue with the interest on the bonds that the Social Security Trust Fund holds to meet full benefits. That'll be about a 20% shortfall in 2034. So, you know, we're the second largest senior citizen national group in the country, and we don't have our heads buried in the sand. We know that you can't just go on automatic pilot, because then there will be a problem. It is not a crisis. The last time Social Security faced a crisis was in the early 80s, when the program was faced with this situation of not having sufficient revenue to pay full benefits in 6 months. We're talking about from now until 2034, so there's time to have some reasonable changes in the program. Now, what would we prefer? We think that the benefits now are so modest that to reduce them in any way, to cut the cost of living adjustment, to raise the retirement age, is absolutely the wrong way to proceed. What we think would be fair and equitable is to examine the threshold for wages subject to the payroll tax. Right now, it's $127,200. After that, in terms of taxes, FICA tax on wages, they're non-existent. So after you earn that amount of money in wages, anything beyond that is not subject to the payroll tax. Now, one proposal that we think has a great deal of merit was introduced in the House by a congressman from Connecticut, John Larson. He has over 100 co-sponsors, and there's a companion bill in the Senate. I'm not sure how many co-sponsors it has, but that bill would keep the wage cap, it's called, at the current level. It increases slightly every year, but would then begin, would institute, reinstitute payroll tax at $450,000 and above. And by the way, those people under that proposal that would start paying payroll tax again, they would get a bump in benefits. And that, we think, is the correct approach.
Simply raise
that,
the cap.
That alone would bring in enough revenue to make the program solvent for 75 years, have a better, more accurate formula for developing the cost of living adjustment that measures inflation as it affects a senior, which is not what happens under the current formula, and would add some additional benefits for the program. So there are ways to do this. Now, you know, we would probably support just eliminating the cap altogether, but politically, realistically, it's probably much more likely if you did not bring in the people between 127 to and 450,000 and looked at bringing some more revenue into some of the wealthier people in our country. I know a few of them. I don't know a lot of them, but I know a few. They're okay with paying a little bit more in the income bracket that they're in. They think their benefits should be adjusted upward, and that's in this proposal. But they're okay with
that. Of course they do. Who could live on $700 a month? But and we can say things, Max, that you can't. So the politicians that are telling you that Social Security is going broke are lying. Can we say, I can say that. I can say that the politicians that tell you that there's no hope for Social Security are lying. There is a simple fix, a really simple one. As Max just said, raise the cap. It was 110, and it has inched up to $127,000. And as Mike said, eliminate the cap, and that simple, just eliminate the cap, and everybody pays into Social Security.
Would that do it? Would that extend it for 75 years, or would we have to do something else?
Starting it again at 450 would extend it for 75 years and have these additional benefits attached to it. Eliminating it altogether would bring in more revenue. And that's an approach we would prefer. But I understand the politics of getting something like this through the Congress. And actually, you know, if you raised it to 450 in wages, as I said, that the cap, current cap, is adjusted every year, goes up. Last year, I think you mentioned it, which is correct, it was about $110,000. So over time, the normal increase in the cap annually will reach that $450,000. You know, they'll meet. And so, you know, it would take a lot long. It would take longer, obviously. But that's an approach that probably is more realistic given the politics involved in getting something like that through the Congress.
I guess we've always advocated here just taking a simple measure of either eliminating the cap altogether or pushing it up to, you know, $1 million or so a year.
Right.
Doesn't seem like it would be a terrible burden on the very wealthy. I know it would be terribly unpopular. What's the chance of, say, right now both the employer and the employee put in 6.2%? Suppose the employer put in 6.5%.
That's another formulation. I think that has more problems politically than looking towards wealthier individuals to chip in, kick in a little bit more in their payroll tax contributions. That's probably a more realistic approach.
There's a big thing going around Facebook right now on the internet about the word entitlement being. I've never seen a Social Security check, but somebody started, and you know how things happen on social media.
Yeah.
And somebody said that the word entitlement is printed on every. Is that true, Max?
You know, I don't know if it's printed. I don't know that it's printed on the check, but it's a It's commonly it's a term commonly referred to by advocates of cutting these programs. You know, you hear it here in Washington all the time. We can't deal with the deficit unless we address entitlements, and they're lumping in Social Security with many other programs that are more accurately defined as welfare. And what this does, it reduces the support for the program by misinforming the public about what this program is. And it is not a welfare program, as we just talked about, and you obviously understand. It's an earned benefit. The other myth that I think we should at least mention quickly, I know we're running out of time, but you often hear there's no money there, right?
That's right.
It's just a bunch of IOUs. That is not right. When people hear that, they think Social Security Trust Fund is composed of little slips of paper with, Max Richmond or something on them, but they're not. The way the program works is when more money comes into the program than is needed to pay benefits, that extra money goes into what is called a Social Security Trust Fund. That money is used to purchase government bonds. These aren't simple IOUs. They're government bonds protected by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. And they are real. They aren't some imaginary piece of paper that doesn't carry value to it. And one way I think is that's very good to explain this is when we had very high employment in the 2009-2010, there wasn't enough money coming in because of unemployment in payroll taxes to cover full benefits. But guess what? Everybody got their benefits. Why? Because these bonds earn interest. And the interest in those years on those bonds, even though there wasn't enough actual payroll tax to cover the benefits in those years, the interest on those bonds made it possible, combined with payroll tax that was coming into the program, to pay full benefits and to add to the size of the trust fund. This is real money. That is one of the most prevalent myths that has gained a lot of traction, especially with younger people. I meet younger people who believe they're more likely to see a UFO or to see Bigfoot than to ever get a Social Security check, and that is simply wrong.
Even in the face of 10, 12, 20% unemployment, which, depending on who you talk to, that's what was happening in 2008 and 2009.
Correct.
The system, the Social Security system, dipped into the trust fund and was able to cover benefits seamlessly. Nobody noticed. I mean, don't get me wrong. There was plenty of articles and Barron's or something, but there was plenty. They dipped into the trust fund and seamlessly covered the benefits, and now everything is humming along smoothly.
Max, we've got about 2 minutes left. Do you have anything you want to sum up? Oh, I'm getting a finger up that says we have 1 minute left. So I guess we're running out of time.
I think that it's so important to keep talking about the value of this program as a retirement program, especially since defined pension benefits have diminished dramatically, disappeared in many communities. And it's important that people understand the value of the program, how it works, and your ability to reach out to an audience of so many retirees and try to separate myth from fact is really critical. And I really thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you and to your audience.
And we want to thank Max Richmond, who's the president and CEO of an organization that's been around for a very long time to defend Social Security and Medicare, has a great reputation. Thank you for being with us, Max.
Okay, don't forget.
Thank you so much.
We got our podcasts for Democratic Perspective on bvid.org. Podcasts on bvid.org.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.